Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com. And I'm once again joined by my esteemed deputy editor, the red extreme to my X Factor, John Dixon. What's going on, Jeff?
I'm here this morning. It's not been a very good couple of days here in Chiefs world, but here I am, as always.
Yeah, the three losses in four games is something that we did not expect, despite what has been a really tough beginning of the season schedule. I'm sure we'll get into more of that as we go through the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. We got some news to give you guys. We'll go through the key quotes from Andy Reid's Monday afternoon press conference. We'll have our world-famous marinated takeaways from Chiefs Bills. I'm sure you're looking forward to those. And then we'll go through the best Chiefs thing I heard all week, a unique take on that today. So it's a good show for you. If you like the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show and the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, I'd ask you to please leave us a rating and a review. You guys have been fantastic with that. We read each and every one of them, and we take everything into account. What's wild, John, about the news today is despite the on-the-field catastrophe, in a sense, of what is happening with the Kansas City Chiefs, the news does not start in Kansas City. It starts in Las Vegas, where Coach John Gruden has resigned from being the head coach of the Raiders. This is the Chiefs' historic number one rival, number one probably to the Denver Broncos. I'm just going to read the NFL.com article. Following recent articles in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times detailing the use of racist, homophobic, misogynistic terms by John Gruden in emails reportedly dating back to 2010. Gruden has resigned as Las Vegas Raiders head coach, NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported on Monday night. Gruden was five games into the fourth season of a 10-year contract with the franchise for which he previously coached in a poor stint. I have resigned as head coach of the Raiders, Gruden said. I love the Raiders and do not want to be a distraction. Thank you to all the players, coaches, staff, and fans for Raider Nation. I'm sorry, I never meant to hurt anyone. Special teams coordinator Rich Bisaccia has been named the Raiders interim head coach. The Chiefs have yet to play the Raiders this season, but this is a franchise that started 3-0 this year. They dropped the last two games, and then you saw some progress. This is now a mess in Vegas, and what has stood out to me, and this was in the reporting from ESPN's Adam Schefter, as this thing was breaking on Monday Night Football, it was kind of surreal. But there was the initial email wave where Gruden had said some racial comments or made a racial comment directed toward the NFLPA's DeMarrus Smith. And that is something that he apologized for through the weekend, saying he never had a racial bone in his body. Then these additional emails came out. It's all stemming from the NFL's investigation into the Washington football team. These emails are from 10 years ago, when John Gruden was working for ESPN, but it was so bad and so alarming and so disgusting that the Raiders were backed into a corner here. They actually had, from what I can understand, the emails. The Davis family had the emails on Friday, and still John Gruden ended up coaching this weekend. The New York Times drops this on Monday night. And John, you taught me about this on an Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, the word trial balloon. It almost seemed like the Davis family was waiting to see the reaction in a weird way. They ended up eventually doing the right thing, but it took them till Monday night, and the NFL, in a sense, was waiting for them to make this decision. The Davis Mark Davis met with John Gruden on Monday. Apparently it was a very emotional meeting. These are two people who are very, very close to one another, and call it what you want, a firing, a dismissal, John Gruden resigning. John Gruden is no longer the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, and I don't think we'll see him again in the National Football League.
Probably not. He's certainly toxic at this point. You know, I thought that the original quotes that came out about D'Amore Smith were, I mean, they were bad. Okay, yeah. I'm not going to say that they were okay, that they were bad. But it sounded like, you know, an isolated incident from a long time ago, and it wouldn't have been that surprising for it to have blown over after a period of time. But the stuff that came out yesterday, I read that New York Times article, and I was just, my mouth was dropping to the floor. And I mean, yeah, there were racist, homophobic things in there. But the thing that really struck me was almost the very last part of the article, last paragraph, where he made some remark about how much he, about Roger Goodell hiding in his concussion tent, and which suggesting pretty strongly that Gruden thinks that the NFL's concussion protocols are a bad idea. Well, what in the world? I mean, how is that a good attitude for a head coach of NFL players to have? I just couldn't believe that. I mean, put aside all the other stuff. Just look at this. I just found that unbelievable that he would have that attitude about it.
I think it just was so much that the Raiders had no choice. And yeah. I think for good reason. I don't think this is someone, as the NFL tries to right the ship in a sense when it comes to some of these social issues, that you need a part of the league. And I think you're right about the concussion point. League safety has become a huge priority for the mm-hmm. NFL. That's why they have the concussion protocol. We know all the problems with CTE and players and their lifestyles after they retire. I think that it's hard for us to make any comment when it comes to some of these racial quotes that came out, these homophobic quotes that came out, except the fact that, like, it just isn't right. When we know that, we don't need this person as a part of the National Football League, and the Raiders ended up making, I think, the right decision. We'll see if John Gruden surfaces at the college level. I saw that suggested out there. When it comes to on the field, I personally, and this is strictly on the field, you know, taking this away, I personally wasn't considering the Raiders a threat to the Chiefs anyway, but certainly not now. The way these things typically go, the team will sputter, and I just don't – I didn't think they were at the quality level of a playoff team, regardless of their start anyway, but this certainly, I think, will hinder that effort. Sometimes it gives the team energy initially, but, you know, I see the Raiders kind of tapering off here. And it's an interim head coach, so they will be looking for a head coach in the offseason. Also does become interesting when it comes to Eric Bieniemy. We mm-hmm. know the rivalry between the Davises and the Hunts. This is going to be a franchise that is, in a sense, looking for some new direction, some new energy. We know the energy and the character that Eric Bieniemy could provide an organization. I think this will be a job to watch. When it comes mm-hmm. to January for Bieniemy, I you know, John, you know this dating back to the early days of this thing. The Davis energy would love to take a coach from, I think, the Chiefs and then beat them with that coach. And so we'll see if that happens with Bieniemy. I don't care if it's with Las Vegas. You could be Denver, Los Angeles. Not going to be Los Angeles now with the job Staley's doing. Get Bieniemy a head coaching job. I understand, you know, you wouldn't root for him when he's playing the Chiefs, of course, but my God, it's long overdue, and Las Vegas should be an opportunity potentially for Eric Bieniemy. All right. Enough about the Raiders. This is a Chiefs show. This is not Silver and Black Pride editor show. This is the Arrowhead Pride editor show. Let's get into some Chiefs news. First is the injury updates. Let's start with some of the good news here. Tyreek Hill and his knee injury that Andy Reid revealed after the game. It's considered minor, according to reports. I believe Adam Schefter was on that one. A stinger is probably not going to keep you out of the next game, so Travis Kelce, I think, should be okay. Interesting one here. Joe Tooney fractured his hand, John, we're going to get to in a second. He still played 100% of the snaps this game. What a freak. What a player to push through that. It seems like this could be a club situation where maybe he can play through it, and we'll see if we see him against the Washington football team. We didn't get additional information about that from Andy Reid on Monday, but the tone, it seems like he might be able to play, or maybe it's a situation where I remember a couple of years back with Kendall Fuller, where he maybe was out for one game and then came back with a club. Who knows if we see that from Joe Tooney. The bad news here, and it's fairly bad because it could have been worse with how it looked, is that Clyde Edwards-Helaire has an MCL sprain, and he's reported to be out for a few of the next weeks. The Chiefs have not put him on injured reserve yet, which tends to favor the idea that maybe he could be back for what could be the third game here. So maybe he misses 2 weeks with this thing. Maybe that's the optimism there, because I was figuring he could potentially be put on IR, and you could see Derek Gale Sayers Gore make his way to the active roster here. And that's still a possibility. It seems like the Chiefs will not necessarily make moves until what is Saturday, which is great for us. But for the foreseeable future, at least next few weeks, John, no Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, I think that if they do put him on IR, it'll happen today. I mean, Tuesday is the day they typically do those kinds of transactions. So we may not yet have the final answer on whether or not they
it might be during
to...
this show that we see that.
Yeah,
you know?
It might actually be. Yeah. Later on today, we may learn about that, or it might be happening right now. We'll get right on that on arrowheadpride.com if that's the case. But so, you know, the story isn't yet known on Edwards-Helaire. You know, the thing I found curious about the Andy Reid's Tooney report, you know, he plays 100% of the snaps, but has a fractured hand, and he apparently played with some kind of covering on the hand during the game on Sunday night. So how did that happen? Did it happen on the last play of a set of downs? And then while the defense is on the field, they wrapped up his hand with a bunch of tape? Or was it in the last series of the game? I'm curious.
So
to
don't
know
quote
how
me
that
on this,
happened.
But I'm pretty sure there are speed casts now, like that is a thing where it is not meant for, okay, this is going to be the cast that you wear for the next 6 weeks.
Right.
It's like,
right.
I don't know. Look, who am I? Am I a medical expert? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, he powered through, which is impressive. I mean,
yeah.
Not the best press conference man for articles necessarily, but you don't need that if he's an all pro and he's willing to stay on the field through a fractured hand. I couldn't imagine doing that. I would be off the field. I'd be in the ER, the triage. I would be okay. The next left guard can come in. I'm okay here. But
I was in the stands when they popped Steve DeBerg. I was in the stands when they popped his thumb back into place. In one game where his thumb had been dislocated in his throwing hand, and they held it out there. I mean, this is before the days of the injury tent, of course.
Right.
And they held it out there away from his body and popped it back into place. And he turned his head and was like, ah, it was horrible to watch. But, you know, you've got to respect somebody who'll go back out on the field after that. And so you have to respect that in Tooney. So there's your Steve DeBerg memory for today's show. Well, we won't have one in every show, but we had one today.
This show has gotten off to a real unique start. We are in it. We led with the Raiders. We're talking about injuries and Steve DeBerg has a mention. So this could be the most odd editor show in our history. All right. So we know Clyde Edwards-Helaire won't be around for the next few weeks. I think this will be a true running back by committee. I think in previous seasons coming in, we would have said it's going to be Darrell Williams. But Jerick McKinnon is someone I believe the Chiefs are actually very high on. We have the snap counts here in the last game. Darrell Williams had 32 snaps. He finished with 32. Jerick McKinnon had 25. But, John, it seems like I think both of these guys are going to get an opportunity. Might be a hot hand situation. Might be a situational a type of mentality that they go with the running back position.
Yeah, you know, you never want to see a player get hurt. But I think we were all very interested in what Jerick McKinnon could do in the Chiefs offense. And I think now we're going to get an opportunity to see where he might not have had that opportunity if Edwards-Helaire had been on the field for the next 3 weeks. I don't think he's got a chance to unseat Edwards-Helaire as the starter, but I think they might use him in different ways than they use Edwards-Helaire. So this could be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, it's worth noting that the Chiefs were beginning, even with Clyde's back-to-back 100-yard rushing games, it seems like they were trending a little bit towards more of a committee. And that actually was something that I asked Eric Bieniemy last week, and Bieniemy he smiled at me. He said, the more the merrier. I don't know what he was. He just wanted to get over the question. But it did seem like it was becoming more of a committee, keep the guys fresh. And it was working for the Chiefs, at least before losing on Sunday night. So we'll see what they do when it comes to the snap counts. It was interesting that when Edwards-Helaire came out and was on the trainer's table, McKinnon got the first snap. And we had talked about that, how McKinnon is a little bit closer to what Edwards-Helaire provides. So it might be that odd situation where you see the number three guy become the number one because of the style. And then Darryl will come in as that change of pace back. All right, John, we talked about the running back snap counts after Clyde was injured. What else do you got from our snap count takeaways?
Well, obviously, a lot of people were concerned and were paying attention to the situation with Willie Gay Jr. As he returned from his injury. He had 46% of the snaps, a fair emphasis on running snaps in the game. And interestingly, not only did that brought down the snap counts for Ben Neiman to 24%, pretty low for him. He's actually had a pretty significant number of snaps, while Gay has been injured. But the other linebacker snaps actually went up a little bit, and that's because the Chiefs, based on the formations they used against the Eagles, actually played fewer linebackers than normal last week, and they got back into a more normal range for the linebackers. So both Bolton and Hitchens actually had their counts go up slightly. And then Gay came in, and then Neiman had just a small number. So that was a positive thing. I know a lot of fans are very unhappy with Ben Neiman and his ability to play at the second level. So that's a positive development for those fans. And just, displays how things change from week to week based on what the opposing offense is showing the defense and how they put their schemes out there.
I believe it was a play at the beginning of the second half, but I mean, you could just tell that Gay is a different type of player than the rest of these the linebackers that the Chiefs currently have. I think it's going to make such a difference when he can get back to closer to 100%. It seemed like there was a little bit of a snap count in his return, which makes sense. Yeah. The Chiefs are not trying to have a setback there. I'm looking at Twitter right now, John, and we have another piece of news information, not to go right back to the running backs, but Jeremy Fowler of ESPN is reporting that the Chiefs might be interested in Marlon Mack of the Indianapolis Colts. We know that there is a GM relationship there, so potentially there was a conversation between Brett Veach and Chris Ballard. You have the Indianapolis Colts right now. They're rolling with Jonathan Taylor, and they have Nyheim Hines, who they just gave a new contract extension to. Marlon Mack had asked for a trade last month, but it'll just be a matter of compensation. If that's true, and Fowler's usually pretty good, what that probably translates to is John, you being correct that we might see Edwards-Helaire on injured reserve by the end of the day. So
that would be my first reaction, is that might suggest that Edwards-Helaire's injury is more serious than they thought yesterday. And that can happen sometimes. They get an initial take on it, and then the doctors look at it again, or they bring in a different doctor, look at different tests or whatever, and they may see that this is a more serious injury than they imagined, and they have to bring in another player. That's interesting. It's very interesting.
Or Darryl Williams. Darryl Williams must be like, what do I have to do? I'm finally the backup. I have an opportunity to take the first crack at this, but it's probably not going to be McKinnon. I've watched LeSean McCoy come here. I watched Le'Veon Bell come here. Now they're going to trade for the former starter of the Indianapolis Colts from a few years ago, who's pretty good. Ridiculous. But no, the more the merrier at the running back position. I think it is a position where sometimes you got to ride the hot hand. We see week in and week out, and it's not just in Kansas City Chiefs games, where just sometimes a running back can get hot, and all of a sudden you keep handing the ball off, and it's that chunk yardage on the ground. Why not continue to add bodies to that room. I would like to see Gore with the call-up, but maybe the Chiefs are not thinking that he's quite ready yet. That's what maybe the interest would lead me to believe. Again, we'll keep you updated on the transactions at arrowheadpride.com. So we talked about the running backs and Gay. Any other snap count takeaways that stood out to you, John?
Well, again, Frank Clark came back fully. He got didn't have him on a lower snap count than normal. He was around 80%, which is about normal for him. And again, because of the differences in how it went the week before, we saw a little bit fewer snaps for defensive ends in Sunday's game. I also thought it was interesting that Jaron Reed's snaps have been trending down over a period of time. That's interesting to me that they've got this veteran player in there that that they thought would be a big piece of making this Chris Jones thing work. And his snaps have been trending down. Meanwhile, Tershawn Wharton's have been trending up. Now, that's good news because you want to see a young player like Wharton be somebody that they can count on. So it's good when you see them using him more, suggesting that he's making progress to be a guy that they can count on over the long term and an inexpensive contract, which he'll certainly be. But it's kind of surprising that we're seeing Reed's numbers slip over weeks and weeks. You know, those are the ones you really have to pay attention to when it's a consistent slope from one point all the way down to the other. Oftentimes, especially with Spagnuolo's defense, you'll see it change drastically from week to week. And it's just about Spagnuolo saying, I'm going to put this guy out there more against this particular offense than I am this guy. And so you'll see it change a lot week to week. But when you see somebody that has a snap count that's, you know, up around 50% or 60%, and over the course of 3 weeks it slides down to 30%, that's something that you should pay attention to.
A quick point on Frank Clark. He was back in the lineup, and it seems like his snaps were okay there and normal. I think it was a bad break for Clark. Not to say that it would have been a grand makeup of what has transpired over the past, you know, couple months here, where he's been absent from the games due to injury. But I mean, he almost had a key play in this game, and who knows if the referee doesn't call roughing the passer, which I've gone into on arrowheadpride.com. I'm not usually one to complain against the referees. I thought the referees were bad on both sides all night. It's just too involved in the game. I said that, but that was a key play. Andy Reid clearly was not happy about it after the game, and it could have led to an interception. It really could have led to a more exciting finish at minimum knows if the Chiefs come back and win the game. But it was an 11-point game at the time, led to a Rashad Fenton interception because of the pressure, but just erased because of that. And I thought it was a bad call, and I thought the other roughing the passer was a bad call as well. So for what it's worth, but yeah, just too involved in the game. And then back to Jaron Reed. Jaron Reed is looking like a mistake, unfortunately. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And the Chiefs are kind of admitting that in a sense with the snap counts and cutting their losses. We'll see if that continues, but just not able to get the production out of him that I think they expected, and Turk Wharton is starting to get some of those opportunities. So good on the Chiefs for again, in a sense, cutting their losses there and basically admitting, like, this is not working out for us right now along the defensive line.
And the other thing about the snap counts this week on the offensive side that I thought was interesting was this was the first time all season through the four previous games that they haven't had all four tight ends active for the game. They put the rookie Noah Gray on the sidelines, made him inactive this week, even though his snap counts had been trending up, which I thought was an interesting thing that we noticed in the Eagles game, that they had been trending up over a period of time, and Blake Bell's had been dropping over a period of time, again, suggesting the rookie was making progress and they were trusting him more in what they were doing. But he's on the sidelines, apparently, so Josh Gordon can play.
Yeah, the problem with that is the Chiefs have seven receivers on this roster now, which is a little bit different for them. And at a certain point, you got to figure out who you don't want. And I don't think you're going to make the guy who has back-to-back touchdown games, who was Fortson, inactive at this point. So you end up having to make a tough decision there. So we'll see if Greg gets back into the lineup against the Washington football team. All right, so that's the news and the snap count takeaways. We are going to continue on with the editor show coming up with the highlights from Andy Reid's Monday afternoon Zoom press conference. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon, coming off the Chiefs 38-20 loss, just uncharacteristic of the Chiefs to the Buffalo Bills. What has stood out to me, John, and it's just crazy to think that he made it this far, but this was Patrick Mahomes' first regular season loss by multiple possessions. Unbelievable to say that, in his fourth year as a starter, but he made it this far. It was bound to happen eventually. That was not a trend that was going to continue for 20 years. Hopefully it's another 4 years before the Chiefs have another multiple possession loss.
But the problem with that is that now he's had two of these over the course of six games. You know, if you're looking for a negative view on that, that's the problem, is that two of the worst losses he's had as a Chief have been over the course of six games, starting with the Super Bowl. And so that's disturbing. I agree. I think it's going to be a while before we see it again, but you can't blame people for noting that and saying, maybe this is the beginning of a trend.
We didn't talk about it in the snap count segment, so let me just tell you, not happy to report this because I know how you're going to feel about it, but Dan Sorensen had 100% snaps on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. And here was Andy Reid about thinking about defensive changes.
Yeah, listen, we try to do that. You know, we look at all that. I would say every game, win or lose, you want to try to get the best guys that you got in position to do a job, do their job, and so and make you the best you can be as a team. And so we'll keep looking at that. And if something needs change, then we'll change it. And we're pretty real with those kind of things.
And I know last night you mentioned you were asked about the big completion to Knox where Sorensen seemed to lose him. And you said, well, you wanted to look at the tape and take a look at it. Have you had a chance to look at it and what happened on that play?
Yeah. So he did. He ran a corner route and then he kind of turned it back up into a swing route. And as the quarterback moved and he dropped him there. So you can't do that. He had his eyes in the backfield and lost where the tight end was. So you got to make sure you got your eyes on him and know where he's at.
Let's go next to Nate Taylor.
Okay, so that first comment by Andy Reid was interesting to me because I don't think Andy Reid likes to reveal too much. And this to me, in my Reid radar, in a sense, was saying, yeah, we're going to be looking at that this week. We are actually maybe going to be making changes. Like, he won't go too far into it. And it's not like that was all that revealing necessarily. But I don't even think he's going that far to say what he said if the Chiefs are not going to go into the defensive room with Steve Spagnuolo and say, is it time? I mean, should we bench Daniel Sorensen and just not have him on the field as much and have him coming in what would be the dime role and have Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill playing much more of these snaps?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. That's not something that Andy Reid's going to talk about publicly. They may be talking about it privately, but he's not going to come out and say, yeah, I'm going to meet with Spagnuolo tomorrow and here's what's going to happen. That's just not Reed's style. And I think your read radar is accurate on this. I think that there could be some changes coming. And part of the reason he doesn't want to talk about it is that, I think anyway, is that he's going to talk to the parties involved and see what they think. But he's going to tell them what he thinks, too. And so, you know, how it may play out may be different than what he thinks after he's talked to them. I think he listens to people.
Right.
You know, Spagnuolo says, well, this is why I'm doing it. He could make his point and make his point stick with Reed. But I think Reed's going into that meeting with an agenda. I agree with you.
Reed was asked about Sorensen specifically after the game. We won't play that for you, but he basically said, I have to watch the tape. If you've ever noticed, when the Chiefs are on defense, Andy Reid's head is buried into the iPad with Patrick Mahomes, so he probably wasn't even seeing just how bad it was.
Right.
He lets Steve Spagnuolo be the defensive head coach, which I actually like. I mean, in previous years, this has worked out for the Chiefs. They won a championship. But then on Monday, he was asked about what he saw in the tape from Dawson Knox's 53-yard touchdown, that it just looked like Daniel Sorensen was mixed up. Here were Reed's comments.
Yeah, so he did. He ran a corner route, and then he kind of turned it back up into a swing route. And as the quarterback moved, and he dropped him there. So he can't do that. He had his eyes in the backfield and lost where the tight end was. So you got to make sure you got your eyes on him and know where he's at.
So, again, I want to go back into what I just said. The fact that Andy Reid usually doesn't go this far. I know that sounds like a conservative answer, and it might be for the average NFL head coach who is just talking. Certainly a guy like Bruce Arians, who, if you dig into, is not afraid to essentially say, yeah, my player was wrong on this play, and here's exactly why. But Andy Reid is basically like, yeah, he did not have a good play there. And to me, I'm putting these two things together. I do finally think that you see a change this week where Daniel Sorensen will be on the field less. We'll get more clues to that on Thursday when Steve Spagnuolo speaks to the media. But if you're looking for a sign, like enough is enough, I sense that in Andy Reid this week.
I think that's a fair description. That doesn't mean that's the way it's going to play out, but I think that's a fair interpretation of what he did say. So we'll just have to see. And I don't know that Spagnuolo is going to tell us anything. I mean, we always talk about how open he is and how willing he is to answer questions, but this might be one that he doesn't want to answer, that he might rather wait and let the offense find out what it is they're going to do. So I don't know that we'll learn that much when Spags talks to the press this week.
I like Spags a lot. This is a tough week for him because the Chiefs, as Brandon Kiley of our show and BK show on Fridays tweeted out, the Chiefs are allowing the worst yardage per play, according to Pro Football Reference, in NFL history. What? Yeah. Like, this That's is the bad. Worst defense in history through 5 weeks. And so I think he'll have a lot of questions to answer on Thursday. And I am not, and I want to make this clear, I am not suggesting that, like, the Chiefs need to make a change at defensive coordinator. I think you got to see the full body of work. Now, however, if this trend continued throughout the season and the Chiefs ended up missing the playoffs because of the defense, or if they don't win the division and have an early exit in what is like the wild card round, I don't know. I mean, I think if your offense is historic and the defense costs you a run and that's a waste of Mahomes' career, and I'm being very clear here, I wouldn't be in favor of getting rid of Spagnuolo. I think you should be afforded years, but I think there are scenarios, and we've started to walk down a scenario where it could become a possibility. And so that's where I think it becomes interesting. Like I said, it's not something maybe that I would do, but I could see the Chiefs considering it if this continues to play out the way it is going right now. So,
you know, I've seen a lot of comments and spoken to people in recent weeks about the situation with the defense. And one of the things that bug me is that people say, well, Andy Reid hires his friends. He's not going to get rid of Spagnuolo because he's Andy's buddy. Well, okay, I get that. Head coaches do this. You, just just like any of us would. When you get in that kind of position, you want people you can trust. And those people are going to tend to be your friends. And yes, you're probably going to be more likely to hang on to them longer than somebody that you hire just because of their ability. But the thing that bugs me most about this, when I hear people talk about this, is that they presume that Bob Sutton stayed on the team staff for years past his spoil date, let's call it, because sure, he was Andy Reid's buddy. But they had never worked together before Bob Sutton came to Kansas City. I don't know where this narrative got started that Bob Sutton was Andy's pal, because he wasn't. Right. They had never worked together before. And so this idea that Sutton was around too long because Andy won't get rid of his friends, well, that's not the case with Bob Sutton. Might be with some other coach, you know, but no, Bob Sutton is not an example.
And Andy respected Bob, and you're right about that. And, you know, I think he was probably here a year too long, but I don't know if it was necessarily because that these guys were friends. And he's not afraid to make tough decisions. I mean, the Chiefs were on a successful path. Now, you know, there were salary cap problems, but then all of a sudden, as the team was building what this is, they got rid of their general manager at the time, right? Like, we saw, you know, Andy Reid and Clark Hunt make tough decisions, and I know that they had a lot of respect for what John Dorsey was able to do as far as the roster building. I mean, you're seeing his impact even in Cleveland right now, where they're an up-and-coming team who had been in a similar state of the Chiefs before John Dorsey got there. Now, he didn't get to see the fruit of his labors in Kansas City. They won a championship. He didn't get to see the fruit of his labors in Cleveland. They won a playoff game. But you got to give him some of that credit there. And that just goes back to the Chiefs always, I think, being willing to make the tough decision. All right, let's go and continue on with some of the things that stuck out about Andy Reid's Monday afternoon Zoom. And it's like I said, it's the bizarro version of the Arrowhead Pride editor show today, because here's Andy Reid discussing Patrick Mahomes and some of the problems that he's going through right now. Mahomes, and there's no other way to say it, he has 6 interceptions. That's as many as he had all of 2020. He's playing poorly. And so here's what Reid had to say.
Yeah, so Pat's wired like a linebacker. I mean, that's his thinking. He wants to get after you every snap. And so he tries to maximize each play. You know, and I think what he's saying is that there's a time and a place for that. Sometimes you can try so hard that you do something that you normally wouldn't do. So, and he realizes that, you know, scoring touchdowns is an important thing right now. So he's going to try to do the best he can to do that. So there's a time and place where you got to pull back on some of those things and just take what's given and go with it.
So, this, in a sense, to me, is Reid essentially saying, like, Pat is feeling the pressure where he knows he has to make a play because of the situation where I think the Chiefs realize they got to score at least 35 points, at least at this stage, to feel comfortable about having an opportunity to win a game. Patrick is like a linebacker, and because of some of the coverages and things that the opposing defenses are showing, you're not able to make these Superman plays. And I think that is kind of what Reid is alluding to. Like, look, he's trying to do too much. There may be a reason for that, but we got to dial him back, because, you know, even if it is the case where the defense is so bad and we need these plays, he's costing us by trying to do too much. And the quicksand becomes even quicker, in a sense. That was my takeaway from that quote.
Well, I think that's right. Mahomes is a unique person, you know, and I've been saying for years that the Chiefs were going to turn him into a pocket passer, and that this was something we should expect to see, because there's a reason that the NFL is full of pocket passers, is that they're successful. And if you can get one that also has the ability to play well out of structure, as Mahomes demonstrated so incredibly in his first 2 seasons in Kansas City, then so much the better. But they have to be able to be a pocket passer, to learn how to take what's given to them, you know, to dink and dunk when that's what's necessary. And, you know, he's going through the pains of doing that. I'll make the point, too, that a number of the interceptions that he's made prior to Sunday were the result of him trying to be a hero when he didn't need to be, when it would have been smarter for him to throw the ball away. Some of those fit in that category. I don't think that's what we saw on Sunday. I think we saw an interception on Sunday that went through the receiver's hands. You can't put that on Mahomes.
Right.
And we saw another one that was batted down by a lineman. Now, yeah, maybe he should have seen that.
Spectacular play.
Yeah,
I mean, it was unbelievable.
Absolutely, yeah. And so maybe Mahomes should have seen that coming, but it's not the same as overthrowing a guy. Trying to complete a pass to somebody 15 yards downfield while you're being tackled, which is the kind of thing that we were seeing in the previous games with Mahomes. Yes, he had two interceptions on Sunday, but I don't really put them down to him. I really don't.
Yeah, by the way, that was Greg Rousseau, young player for Buffalo defensive end who, I mean, just made an outstanding play. I mean, it was incredible. You're right. I think the number's alarming. I think it's a product of a lot of things, including again the coverage that the Chiefs are seeing. This was a question from a friend of the site, Sam McDowell, the star. Good question about some of the coverages. Here's Andy Reid.
Yeah, so when Pat was on us for a few years, we saw a lot of man coverage. They challenged us with man, and and then we started getting pretty good at that. But we went through a phase there where, like we are now, where man was, we struggled with it a bit. We pounded through that, and then and now we're seeing zone. We're seeing the shell zone. So whether it's too deep or whether it's quarters, palms, which is kind of a mixture of cover four, the quarters look, and two. And they're making you kind of work your way down the field. So we're putting these drives together, but we're having hiccups within the drive, or you're having turnovers or penalties, and those things, they kill you. And so it's not that you're not racking up the yards. It's not that you're not moving the ball. You've just got to be more consistent with it and be able to sustain these drives. They're not going to give up the big shot there necessarily.
So there you go. And it's a good point, and it's interesting to see Andy Reid break it down. It was just a different version of Reid in this whole press conference, as I've kind of been seeing. You saw the frustration. You saw him talking about some of the problems with Patrick Mahomes. This is going into X's and O's, which we don't usually see him do. He usually kind of keeps that close to his vest, but you're just seeing a lot of deeper coverages and zone coverages by the Chiefs. And you're seeing teams who usually like to blitz in the Baltimore Ravens and the Buffalo Bills, not doing that at all and just saying, okay, deepen up these coverages. Andy Reid just listed them out. And I've been saying it now for weeks, and I'll make the point again because we saw it in this game. It's just like, well, look, the Chiefs eventually are shooting themselves in the foot. Another four turnovers in this game. I understand, we went through reasons why, but turnovers are turnovers at the end of the day. And let the Chiefs shoot themselves in the foot. The only way we could do that is if Patrick Mahomes doesn't throw a 75-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill on the third play of this drive. If we have them, by the way, and this was an insane, insane beginning of the game, 17 plays, 56 yards, and a field goal. How often are drives 17 plays for 56 yards, and you end up getting a field goal? This is what teams want. He's like, okay, if we have the Chiefs run more plays, more time for the ball to go after off of Tyreek Hill's chest, more time for a potential fumble from a Clyde Edwards-Helaire or one of the receivers, and then we get the ball back, have more opportunities, and the defense is so bad that we're probably going to score a touchdown. And it is what it is. And until the Chiefs defense stops opposing teams on fourth down, isn't gashed like they are, isn't having these miscommunications, and they're able to give Patrick Mahomes a short field, and then Patrick Mahomes and this offense shows that they can beat these type of coverages, go down the field in methodical fashion, play in that short to intermediate, and really hurt teams because they're going to be scoring touchdowns while draining 11 minutes, then you're going to keep seeing the similar results. Now, here's the key, and it's going to go into one of my takeaways in this, but you're playing really good teams right now, and And you're about to enter a stretch where that's not going to be the case. And that's why you saw the Chiefs beat the Eagles, because they're just more talented. That's why you're going to see, knock on all the wood you want, the Chiefs beat the Washington football team, because it takes a particular talent level of team to do this. The Chiefs just happen to play three of them early here, in my opinion, in what is the LA Chargers, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's interesting because I've made this point several times now in recent weeks that you can't really beat the Chiefs by running the ball. You know, the teams that have been successful running the ball against the Chiefs have not tended to win those games. And it's interesting that the Chiefs are now trying to work the running game into their offense more, which I think is a good thing because it opens up more opportunities for Mahomes. You know, if they're going to put two deep safeties back there, that's an opportunity to run the ball.
Right.
If you got those safeties lining up there in the back. So, you know, you're taking what the defense gives you. And then eventually, if you do it enough, they have to come in to respect the run. And that gives you the opportunity to make the deep pass. Now, we haven't really seen that happen except in one spectacular catch to the 75-yard play to Hill recently. But it should work over a period of time. And they're not going to hang their hat on it as an offensive thing. It's just something that's going to make the passing game more effective. They're still going to live on that. But I think it's interesting that while other teams can't rush the ball to beat the Chiefs might be able to improve their offense by rushing the ball some. This is the give and take of the game planning and the coaches playing chess matches with each other. And some weeks it plays out one way, and then another week it plays out another. And you just never know how it's all going to play out. And I think that's one of the things that Andy's talking about here.
Right.
You know, you've got to be able to run the ball. You've got to be able to throw the ball. You've got to choose the right time and place to do these things. That's what he's talking about, is this chess game that goes on between the coaches and their game plans.
That is Andy Reid from his Zoom press conference on Monday afternoon. If you want to listen to the full press conference for all of the Andy Reid takeaways, you can. It's on From the Podium right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. When we come back, our world famous marinated takeaways from this Chiefs Bills game, and we will give you the best Chiefs thing we saw all week. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, I'm gonna let this marinate.
You know, let that one marinate and then we can circle back.
Adapt, react, readapt.
It takes time. It takes years.
That's the takeaway.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon. We're in week 6 of the NFL season. The Chiefs are in last place still, 2-3 in the division, but they look to turn it around this Sunday against the Washington football team. But before we turn the page with the Great British Chiefs Show tomorrow, we have your world famous marinated takeaways, and we start with John Dixon. John, what do you got?
Well, as always, we tend to touch on these because they're on our minds as we begin the show before we get here.
Right.
But I think that what we're going to see from Jerick McKinnon while Edwards-Helaire is hurt is going to be very interesting. This is a player that we were very excited to see play for the Chiefs in the preseason. We thought we'd see more of him than we have. And now he's going to get an opportunity to play. I think we may see the Chiefs use him differently. But the point you made earlier, I think, is also correct, that he stylistically is much more like Edwards-Helaire than he is Darrell Williams is. And so they might end up just using him in exactly the same way. It'll be very interesting to see how they play this out. And if they give him more touches as a receiver, Then when Edwards-Helaire is back, maybe they give him more touches. It's a lot of different ways that this could play out.
I agree with you. I think it's going to be very interesting. And one point that I think is worth saying here, I don't know if it's likely, but there's a non-0% chance that Clyde Edwards-Helaire could lose his job. It just is the case. And not, like I said, not to say that it's likely, but yeah. I think the Chiefs are high on Jerick McKinnon. And if he goes bananas here in this opportunity, these next couple weeks, it can be a situation where you just don't go back to the other guy because things are working, right? In a sense. And not to say Clyde won't have other opportunities if that played out in future seasons, but at a certain point, you may go with the same player, as you go here. So I'm eager to see what McKinnon could do. I know it's tough for Clyde because he was coming off finally, I think, having mm-hmm. some consistent yeah. success there. And right. this seems to keep happening to him in his young career. This happened toward the end of last season where I thought he finally was putting things together and coming into his own. And then he has the setback where he really wasn't even 100% toward the end of the playoffs. He had to get to the offseason until then. So I think the Chiefs will be cautious here with getting him back. And they have some options here. They're exploring other options reportedly from ESPN and Marlon Mack as well.
Well, I think you're right. I agree that it's not likely, but we could see McKinnon become the starting running back over time. But boy, if that happens, these people who've been complaining about the Chiefs using a first round pick on a running back, if Edwards-Helaire becomes the backup, those people their heads are going to explode. So I just, Twitter. You know, just want to warn you about that.
Roy Twitter for the week. I want to make a point about the schedule. And again, you noted this, John, I hinted at it in the last segment, but you know, we looked at the schedule at the beginning of the season when the schedule came out, Browns, Ravens, Chargers, Eagles, and Bills. And we felt if the Chiefs can get out of there 3-2 or 4-1, that would be a pretty good start to the year because you're really facing all of the AFC contenders right in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you had these turnover games where you drop these close games against the Ravens and Chargers, and then you face a Bills team where, you know, the problems keep piling up and the game just gets away from you and it's 38-20. Probably was closer than the score, especially if you consider I thought the referee involvement to an extent, over involvement on both sides. Again, I'm not complaining about the call specifically on the Chiefs. Who knows, you know, with a different crew, how this game plays out. But the Chiefs were awfully close if you consider those Ravens and Chargers wins to being 3-2 or 4-1. Even mm-hmm. I won't yeah. give them the Bills game because no matter what, they weren't going to win this game with the way that they're playing. So I look at the schedule now and it goes WFT, who we're going to be talking about the rest of the week on arrowheadpride.com. You have the Tennessee Titans up and down year who lost to the Jets. I understand that they were beaten down a little bit, but come on, the New York Giants. I can tell you, and I'm certain of this, the Chiefs are going to win these three games. They are. I know that they're playing terribly right now, but they are better than all these teams, even maybe on their worst day, in my opinion. I know some people are like, well, the Titans, I don't consider the Titans that. So you're going to be looking at 5-3, and then you get another measuring stick game against the Green Bay Packers. And that'll be the next one to me where, all right, it's time for the Chiefs to show that they are capable of beating a team like this because they're going to need that confidence boost going into the second part of the season. And what happens here as you go is you just like never know what happens in the NFL. Like the Chargers look really good now, as do the Buffalo Bills, but they could drop a game. We saw the Buffalo Bills drop one against the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one. And maybe this starts to come back to you a little bit. But here's the thing, you got to win. And I do mm-hmm. think they'll win the next three games, but you got to take care of your own business. And it's so early. You know, I don't want to say that the division is out. I don't think the division is out by any means because you get another shot at the Chargers and they'll drop one eventually. AFC bye seems a little less likely, but mm-hmm. there's still a lot to play for when it comes to home field. Let's just say the Chiefs don't get the AFC bye. You know, we're talking about months down the line here and they have to play in the wild card. And then, you know, you win a wild card game and then you get to that next round. the top seed can be knocked out by whoever they're playing, in a sense, if you build this thing right. And you could still have an AFC title game. You just have to see how it goes. There's so much time right here. And the Chiefs' schedule opens up a little bit for them where they're going to beat these teams and you'll feel better about it. What'll be bad is if you get to the Packers game, you're like, you're feeling good about 5-3. And then what has taken place in these last couple of weeks just rears its ugly head. But that's the stretch we have ahead. And I just think it's worth remembering that at this stage.
Yeah. In total, though, the Chiefs actually face a fairly difficult schedule over the remaining weeks of the season compared to the rest of the league. This was something we talked about this briefly on Sunday morning that I was going to look this up because I had a spreadsheet set up from last year where I could do it. And I wrote about it after the game this week. And I found it kind of surprising because I had just assumed that since the, you know, normally these NFL schedules, they front load it one way or another way. You know, you get your weakest teams first and your strong teams at the end or vice versa. And so when I saw the strong teams at the beginning, I thought, okay, it's going to get easier towards the end. And yes, you're right. These next few weeks should be fairly easy. But after that, when they get into the meat of their division schedule, remember they haven't played the Raiders or the Broncos yet, just one of the Chargers games. And both of those teams have good records. And that's part of why the Chiefs have a fairly strong opponent schedule in front of them is that they've only played one of their AFC West games. And then they got the Packers in there. And, you know, there's other games towards the end of the schedule that might be problematic. So, you know, this is a bad, so they may not be as hard as they look right now, but you know, if you got to look at it on what the one lost records are right now, they actually have a pretty tough schedule. I think it's going to be fine for a few games, but I do think that that Packers game is going to be the next measuring stick for the Chiefs.
All right. What was your next marinated takeaway, John?
You know, I talked about after this game, the pass rush being an issue. You know, that they, as I've said many times, that you can rush against the Chiefs, but you just can't pass against the Chiefs and expect the Chiefs have to give up less passing yards than they do rushing yards in order for the game to be a victory for them. That's something the defense has always been able to do well. Even when Bob Sutton was here, we had a decent pass defense. And people always look at the cornerbacks first, but I'm really starting to wonder if the pass rush is the problem, that we're not getting enough pressure on these quarterbacks, giving them all day and just too much time for cornerbacks and safeties to cover these players in the secondary. So, I'm not the only one who's worried about this, but
certainly when you're playing Josh Allen and certainly when you're playing Lamar Jackson and certainly when you're playing Justin Herbert, and that's where, you know, I look at these next few games, I'm not worried about Taylor Heinicke having extra time or even Ryan Tannehill to an extent, Daniel Jones. You got to figure out your pass rush by the time Aaron Rodgers is the next opponent. Yeah. I mean, because it's these quarterbacks who can go toe to toe with Patrick Mahomes. Like that to me are the problem teams right now. And when the defense is that bad and then Mahomes feels like he has to do more than even he is capable of, that is leading to me to the losses. And so I completely agree. The defensive line has not been healthy. I don't think it's helping Jaron Reed that Frank Clark missed basically the entire beginning of the season. And even in the sense that Frank Clark comes back in and you're still missing Chris Jones. Mike Dana has been a pleasant surprise, but wow, he's the only bright spot of your defensive line right now. Like that is a significant problem. So I completely agree. My next marinated takeaway, John, is the sense that the defense to me, you want to say, oh, it'll be a quick fix by inserting Danny Sorensen onto the bench and bringing in Juan Thornhill. I thought Mina Kimes, who does a great job nationally on ESPN, made a good point in the sense that the Chiefs play a lot of dime personnel, meaning the three safeties are out there anyway. So unless you're becoming strategic and you're starting to put guys in the lineup, now Thornhill in that Sorensen spot would certainly help when you're in the base and the nickel. But I'm talking about some of these sub packages. Like, do you start to tap in? Maybe it makes more sense to get Lammons going, or you think about, you know, Dorian O'Daniel profiles like a little bit as a hybrid player. I know he's listed as a linebacker. These guys who play special teams like O'Daniel and Watts, do you go that far and say, no, Dan Sorensen, you are just going to play special teams, man? I don't know if it's necessarily a quick fix for two reasons, because of how much dime the Chiefs play with three safeties anyway. And then it's an unknown door, right? Like, there is a possibility that the Chiefs could put Thornhill on the field and he may not be the answer. Like, different isn't always good. And I think it's just, and it may be, I think it's just approaching the question of, are the Chiefs to a point where anything else is better? I think that is arguable. And I would probably say, yeah, you got to try it, right? But I caution people and I caution myself from even thinking like, this is definitely going to work. And I just wanted to, I think, get that out there. That, like, that's my deeper thought about this Sorensen problem.
No, I think that's exactly right. It's real easy to point at a player on a defensive unit and say, this guy is too slow. He's no good in coverage. We got to get him off the field. Okay, that's fair. You can do that. You can notice those things. Those things can be true, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right choice for the team.
Right.
You know, there are reasons that Sorensen is a positive on this team. He's pretty good in the box, and he's bad in coverage. So they have to find the way where they can use him to his best advantage. And I don't think that's having him on the field for 100% of the snaps. I agree with you. I think we got to try this and make sure that there isn't some other way where we can use him better. But, you know, they've got a lot of variables to mess with here. And it may be an issue of, well, okay, yeah, we think Juan Thornhill is better as a coverage safety. But if we lose that run defense in the box, where Sorensen is better, then that doesn't make these other things work for us. So I think you're exactly right. It's gotten to the point they have to try it. But I think we have to be careful to assume that that's going to solve some huge problem. Because it might, but it might create a larger one. We just don't know until they try it.
Any other marinated takeaways from this game, John?
I just, you know, we talked about this a little bit already and on the Mahomes issue. I think it's important to note that Mahomes is still a good quarterback. He's still probably the best quarterback in the league. He's going through a rough patch right now, some of which is his fault, some of which is not his fault. And I think fans of other teams are chomping at the bit to show, oh yeah, this is the problem you've always going to have with this guy, that he's making all this money and he's not going to be as good as he was for the first couple, three seasons. And I think it's way too early to make that kind of a judgment about it. So, you know, I think we need to give him some time to figure out how to get over this newest hump in his life. He's been lucky that he hasn't had to get over too many of them. And when he has, he's been able to do it with ease. But, you know, I think the guy's got all the character and all the talent in the world, and I think he'll get through this. So we just have to give him the opportunity to do so.
I think that's a great point, and it is worth remembering that the Chiefs did have some struggles, and it was, we talked about it a little bit with the Reed quotes there, but it was with man coverage in 2019, and there was some similar freaking out. It was only two losses in a row. Then Mahomes got hurt, and he ended up coming back, and the rest is history, but that was the year the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. Like, they're going to figure this out. I mean, that's the best way. And they have, again, I had three softer games to do so before they get going again, as you mentioned, John, with that deeper schedule. So those are your marinated takeaways. My last one is the fact, and a really quick one here. I know it was limited opportunities. I brought up your snap counts again. Josh Gordon only had 8 offensive snaps, 10%. He ended up having a catch. He looks the part. I think he'll be the number two receiver. It'll take some time here. Quite obviously, the fact that he was able to even get in a game. Remember, the original reports were that it would take a few weeks for him to even be conditioned. That's the one thing you know by him being on the field is that he was ready, which is impressive considering he hadn't played since 2019. But he was conditioned. That was a question. And then enough of the playbook to get 8 plays built in. let's give this guy a few weeks. I think you'll see, and I'm going out on a limb here, but I don't care. I think you'll see a couple. I think you'll see a couple of 100-yard games for Josh Gordon. You know, you've been wondering, when are you going to get this next Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill capable of that in the lineup? I'm high. I'm as Matt, as our Matt Stagner would say, I am bullish on the Josh Gordon experiment. All right.
Well, you know, I said the top here that this felt more like a postseason move than a regular season move.
Yeah.
You know, that this was a guy that they're thinking about the postseason with Josh Gordon. And so I agree. I think that over time we're going to see him used more and more. And he really, the one target he had on Sunday, he looked fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so there's every reason to think that he could be a good player at this point.
All right. It's time for the best Chiefs thing we heard all week. And I want to preface this before we get into the clip. There's not a lot of good Chiefs stuff out there right now. There really isn't. So we had to take a unique approach to this. You're going to hear this, but then wait for my explanation after. The best Chiefs thing we heard all week.
To have the decency on a Monday morning to wait a few minutes before you get on my damn nerves with that drivel spewing out of your mouth. That is nonsense. You are lying to the American public. The Kansas City Chiefs are done. Let me say it right now.
You're saying they're done.
They're going to the postseason, sure, because of that dude, Patrick Mahomes. Their defense is trash. They can't stop a cold. Let's just call it what it is, okay? They're awful. They're the worst defense in the league in points allowed, second worst in yards allowed, second worst against the run. Don't get me started with what they are against the pass. They are an atrocity. And oh, by the way, Steve Spagnuolo, I thought this was a defensive coordinator that was a Super Bowl champion. Wasn't he the defensive coordinator for the New York Giants in 2007 when they won the Super Bowl, when they beat Tom Brady and the New England Patriots? Suddenly, he can't coach defense? I mean, my God.
So there you go, Stephen A. Smith of First Take on ESPN. And here's my point about this. So you've been to three straight AFC title games. You won a Super Bowl. You won back-to-back AFC titles. Yeah, now through 3 weeks, or now through 5 weeks, I should say, you've managed to become that underdog again. You now can take that underdog mentality, that underdog approach. We live in that world now where through 5 weeks, people are ready to write you off. Stephen A. Smith was not the only one. We saw it with Rex Ryan, who is on the same network. We saw it on Fox Sports with saying, you know, this is the Cowboys' year. To me, there's no better motivation than just looking around right now. And the motivation, we know for a fact, drives these players. The Chiefs, if I'm this coaching staff, I'm pulling clips like that. And I'm saying, this is what they think of you. Who are you? And at a certain point, you know, this is a team that has talked about not having the right mindset at the beginning. Let people doubt and then go show them. I mean, we have seen people doubt Mahomes too many times, and then we've seen him count on his fingers. Let's see that from the defensive room. It is so early for people to be making these decisions and making these predictions about the Chiefs not being in Super Bowl contention. Have they not watched the last 3 or 4 years? I think that's the best Chiefs thing I heard all week, because there's ultimate motivation around. And I think the Chiefs should tap into that.
I think we should be happy that Stephen A. Smith thinks the Chiefs are not going to be good in the postseason. Is that your point there?
I think you're right though.
I think you're right. I think it's just way too early to count them out. But you know, this is what these guys do. They spend their days looking for controversial things that people will get riled up about. And maybe they like the idea that they can be used as motivation. Maybe that's how they feel that they're affecting the NFL through their opinions or whatever. I don't know, but we see it all the time. And I'm just not going to get too worked up about it, other than thinking it might be helpful to the Chiefs to see this kind of stuff.
Completely agree. And I know for a fact, in talking with people with the team, they do pull these type of things for motivation. And I hope they do this week heading into that game. against the Washington football team. All right, we went over time, John. There was a lot to talk about today, but we got through it, and that's an editor show for you. If you like the Arrowhead Pride editor show, please rate and review us on Apple iTunes. Coming up later this week, it's the Arrowhead Drive on Wednesday. The guys across the pond will begin to preview the Washington football team. Tom Childs will not hold back as far as he feels about these Kansas City Chiefs that we know. For John Dixon, I'm Pete Sweeney. Thanks to Steven Serta. Thank you for listening to the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show.